Good morning, Bill Lynch with the CBS World News Roundup. If the Soviet hardliners who grabbed power before dawn yesterday thought it would be easy, they're having second thoughts this morning. Hundreds of thousands of people took to the streets today in noisy but peaceful demonstrations denouncing the Kremlin junta. Coal miners and other workers are on strike. Confusion, rumor, and misinformation abound. As Jonathan Sanders tells us from the CBS News Moscow Bureau, opponents of the coup have rallied to Boris Yeltsin, Gorbachev's erstwhile rival, who is now demanding his restoration.
The people who deposed Mikhail Gorbachev may have calculated that they could swiftly repeat what was done in 1964, ousting Nikita Khrushchev, but they forgot to include in their calculations an important new factor, Boris Yeltsin and the democratic forces that are backing him. It looks like the democratic forces are holding together in the city of Moscow and in Leningrad and in some of the radical hotspots throughout the country, and they're putting up stiff resistance to this attempt to impose law and order across the Soviet Union.
Is there a split in the leadership now? We're getting reports that the foreign minister, Alexander Bezhmertnik, is dropped off the scope, so to speak.
That does not surprise me. If you looked at the list of who is in the Special Emergency Committee, there was nobody from the foreign ministry involved. More than anyone, the foreign ministry knows how much what is going on hurts the image of the Soviet Union, hurts their ability to deal with the rest of the world, and puts the Soviet Union back on that slippery slope to being a third world power.
And through it all, no sign of Mikhail Gorbachev, I take it.
At the big rally outside the White House, that's the big white building where the Russian parliament meets and Yeltsin has his office, Edward Shevardnadze spoke today to a roar of approval, and he asked that very same question, where is our president?
There could be an answer. Soviet journalistic sources tell CBS News that Gorbachev arrived in Moscow at 11 p.m. last night at the Vnukovo VIP airport. Except for China, most of the outside world is galvanizing its opposition to the Soviet coup. German Chancellor Kohl today demanded the return of Mikhail Gorbachev. French President Mitterrand demanded the new Kremlin leaders restore democratic practices. He called for a special European summit. Secretary of State Baker will go to an emergency NATO meeting in Brussels tomorrow. Today, the European community took action, as Jesse Shulman reports from The Hague.
The European community is demanding that constitutional order be reestablished in the Soviet Union and that President Gorbachev be reinstated as head of state. They say there is no doubt as to the true nature of the regime now in power, and they say assistance to the Soviet Union is to be stopped. British Foreign Minister Douglas Hurd.
We decided on the suspension of economic cooperation. That means that suspended are the food credit guarantees and the technical assistance program.
Emergency help will continue as needed. Technical assistance and food credits will only be resumed when the legitimate government and human rights are restored. The community called on the government now in power to refrain from all intimidation and violence. Jesse Shulman for CBS News, The Hague.
Mikhail Gorbachev's vacation was not the only one ruined by the Kremlin coup. President Bush and his key aides have all abandoned golf clubs and fishing rods. At this hour, Mr. Bush is at the swearing-in of Robert Strauss as his new man in Moscow, and he plans a news conference at 7:30 this morning Pacific time. More from correspondent Wyatt Andrews.
One open question is just when Ambassador-designate Strauss will report to Moscow. Will he leave right away to express American displeasure with the coup, or stay back to signal that? Last night, the president himself issued a tough new statement directed at the coup's leadership, warning them the United States supports Yeltsin, opposes any use of force in the Baltics or against Yeltsin, and wants the restoration of Gorbachev's job as Union president. Mr. Bush has said the United States won't go forward with economic projects with the regime, but many in Congress urge that he take more dramatic steps, such as the specific suspension of grain credits or the delay of most favored nation trade status. Wyatt Andrews, CBS News, The White House.
In addition to freezing U.S. aid programs, Washington has taken other steps to show its displeasure with events in Moscow. Last night, the Air Force allowed two Soviet MiG-29 fighters to refuel at Alaska's Elmendorf Air Force Base, but then told the pilots to go back home. Their invitations to U.S. air shows have been canceled. What's left of Hurricane Bob, the season's first, and now a tropical storm, is weakening over eastern Canada this morning. Its race up the U.S. eastern seaboard left at least four people dead, millions of homes blacked out, and countless down trees. Harold Dow has more from Cape Cod.
Hours before yesterday's storm hit, officials in both Rhode Island and Massachusetts had declared a state of emergency, ordering everyone in low-lying areas to leave. It was that action that may have saved many lives. But there was property damage, homes flooded, pleasure boats destroyed, electrical power cut off to hundreds of thousands of people. Many were inconvenienced, left in the dark, but relieved that the damage wasn't worse. There were problems last night in Cape Cod. Law enforcement officials put a 9 o'clock curfew in effect because of some sporadic looting, people taking advantage of the power failure. Harold Dow, CBS News, Cape Cod.
China is updating the cost of its summer flooding, the death toll now nearly 3,000, and the economic loss some $12 billion. Before dawn today, the Air Force blew up a small rocket carrying secret Star Wars experiments when it went haywire after liftoff from Cape Canaveral. Civilian space analysts say infrared sensors on the ground and on planes were waiting to track the rocket, part of a program called Red Tigris, to learn how to distinguish enemy missiles from decoys and natural phenomena. Leaders of Yugoslavia's crumbling federation begin talks in Belgrade today on the country's future. Overnight, there was more fierce fighting between Serbs and Croats. Police in India claim to have tracked down the mastermind of the assassination bomb that killed former Prime Minister Rajiv Gandhi in May. But as newsman Christopher Thomas reports, the suspect and his comrades made sure they weren't questioned.
Police raided a suburban house in the southern city of Bangalore in the hope of catching India's most wanted man alive. But the man, named as Sivarasan, alias One-Eyed Jack, shot himself dead and six alleged accomplices died seconds after swallowing cyanide. The search for Sivarasan was India's biggest ever manhunt. He was known as a top leader of the Tamil Tigers, the Sri Lankan separatist group, believed by India to have assassinated Gandhi in a bomb attack 3 months ago. His death followed a chain of suicides by members of the Tamil Tigers to avoid arrest. Police believe all the top ringleaders involved in killing Gandhi are now dead. Christopher Thomas for CBS News, New Delhi.
South African police shot and killed one black student and wounded five in Standerton, southeast of Johannesburg. Those students, for reasons not made clear, had tried to occupy a newly built school for blacks. As usual, Mexico's ruling Institutional Revolutionary Party is headed for victory in congressional elections, and also, as usual, the leftist opposition is crying fraud. One human rights group agrees, saying at least one precinct had more ballots than voters, and that a knife-toting election official urged voters to cast their ballots for President Salinas's party. Former Democratic Congressman Harley Steggers Sr., who represented West Virginia on Capitol Hill for 32 years, died today of congestive heart failure and respiratory failure. He was 84 years old. The dollar fell in Europe today amid jitters over the Soviet crisis. Gold dropped too, the London fixing $358.50 an ounce, down $2. And at Wall Street, the Dow Industrials are ahead nearly 23 points. It's 10 past 7. CBS News Update, I'm Frank Settapani. After reviewing overnight intelligence reports on the crisis in the Soviet Union, President Bush was scheduled to attend swearing-in ceremonies for the new U.S. ambassador to Moscow, Robert Strauss. Those ceremonies were supposed to take place a half hour ago. The president is scheduled at this hour to hold a press conference on the Soviet coup. In Moscow, Russian Republic leader Boris Yeltsin rallied support for deposed President Gorbachev and promised to hold out as long as necessary against the hardliners who seized power yesterday. Jonathan Sanders in Moscow says an independent radio station that was silenced by the KGB yesterday was back in business today.
The first press organ they shut down, the independent radio Echo Moscow, is back on the air. They've been broadcasting the appeals of the radical mayor of Moscow, the radical mayor of Leningrad, reading Boris Yeltsin's decrees, and to be fair, reading the decrees that were produced by the special emergency committee. So far, they're on the air broadcasting free opinions and giving Boris Yeltsin and the people who are trying to hold out against this coup, giving them a voice that's heard at least around Moscow.
While Yeltsin's call for a general strike hasn't caught fire, tens of thousands of Soviet citizens defied a ban on demonstrations to stage protests in Moscow and Leningrad. Correspondent Bert Quint in Moscow reports that some troops have gone over to Yeltsin's side.
There are some units who have made it clear that they do not want to act against the Soviet people. Some units have openly declared their support of Yeltsin. The coup leaders found it necessary to arrest another general. But just how serious these cracks are, it's too soon to tell.
Thousands of Siberian coal miners stepped up the economic pressure on the new regime by walking off the job, and in the Netherlands, the 12-member European community decided to suspend economic assistance to the Soviet Union. In an emotional speech to the crowd outside the Russian parliament today, former Foreign Minister Shevardnadze...
This is a CBS News special report of Presidential News Conference. I'm Mitchell Krause. President Bush has just sworn in Robert Strauss as the new U.S. ambassador to the Soviet Union, and he's now about to hold his second news conference since the coup that ousted Mikhail Gorbachev. Mr. Bush has been meeting with his top national security aides to discuss the latest Soviet developments. Secretary of State Baker and Defense Secretary Cheney have broken off vacations to take part in the talks, and Baker is due to leave for Brussels later today for an emergency NATO ministers meeting. Last night, Mr. Bush supported Russian Federation President Boris Yeltsin's call for a restoration of Mikhail Gorbachev to power, and he condemned what he called the unconstitutional resort to force by the coup leaders. In other developments today, CBS News has learned that Gorbachev is now back in Moscow. Jonathan Sanders in CBS News Moscow Bureau says two independent sources report Gorbachev flew to a VIP airport last night. Hundreds of thousands of people demonstrated against the coup in Moscow and Leningrad today. And now President Bush is approaching the podium. And now here is the president with his news conference. He's accompanied by Secretary of State Baker and Defense Secretary Cheney. Ambassador Strauss is to his left.
Soviet Union continued to deeply concern the whole world. The unconstitutional seizure of power is an affront to the goals and aspirations that the Soviet peoples have been nurturing over the past years. This action also puts the Soviet Union at odds with the world community and undermines the positive steps that have been undertaken to make the Soviet Union an integral and positive force in world affairs. I have this morning spoken with Boris Yeltsin, the freely elected leader of the Russian Republic, and I assured Mr. Yeltsin of continued U.S. support for his goal of the restoration of Mr. Gorbachev as the constitutionally chosen leader. And I also shared with him the support that other world leaders voiced in my several conversations yesterday, conversations I had with those leaders in Eastern Europe and leaders in Western Europe as well, Prime Minister Kaifu, and I gave him that reassurance. Mr. Yeltsin is encouraged by the support of the Soviet people and their determination in the face of these trying circumstances. He expressed his gratitude for our support of him and President Gorbachev. Now, the situation concerning President Gorbachev's status is still unclear. And I've twice tried to reach him by phone, including within the last hour, but have so far been unsuccessful. We continue to closely monitor this situation. Our new, and I might add, very able ambassador to the Soviet Union, Robert Strauss, just sworn in, will be departing immediately from Moscow to take charge of our embassy and to report to me on the situation that he finds in the Soviet Union. So I'm asking him to go over there, get the lay of the land, establish what will be strong leadership, the embassy. We've got a good team in place, but this man is in charge of this important mission, and then to return within the next several days to give me a full personal report on what he sees there. He will not be presenting his credentials on this trip. It's going to be a short trip, and I've said that this group assume power extra-constitutionally. In conclusion, I want to emphasize that we are going to monitor the situation closely and consider its ramifications throughout the entire world. And I've emphasized in my conversation with the Eastern European leaders that the democratic processes in their country cannot be reversed. Eastern Europe is important. And I've called three of the leaders, and I want to take this opportunity to assure them of our continued interest and the need to retain calm in those countries. And indeed, they were very grateful for the contact by the United States. The United States will continue to support the economic and political reforms in their countries. And I will continue to seek the advice and counsel of Eastern European leaders in the days ahead. And of course, the Secretary and I will be in close touch with the Western European leaders and others around the globe. Because this is an ongoing process of consultations, we intend to maintain a more formal work schedule during the remainder of my stay in Maine. There will be a number of meetings with government officials and private sector experts related to the events in the Soviet Union. There will be daily briefings on a formalized basis by my national security advisors. And I will be keeping in touch with Secretary Baker. As you know, I'll be receiving Prime Minister Mulroney and also Prime Minister Major, and of course, receiving Ambassador Strauss when he returns. Secretary Baker will be leaving today for the NATO ministerial that's being held, will be held in Brussels. These difficult events in the Soviet Union, I believe, demonstrate the wisdom of our strong and continuous support for the process of reform and restructuring. And we'll continue to support the democratic processes that have been set in motion in the Soviet Union. And most importantly, I know that the American people stand behind the people of the Soviet Union who are seeking more freedom and more opportunity in their society. So I'd like now to turn this podium over to Ambassador Strauss for a comment, and then Secretary Baker and I will be glad to take questions, or Ambassador. And I have here, of course, our top national security team, Secretary Cheney and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs is here, the Vice President. And if you wanted to direct questions to any of them, why, that would be fine, too. We're following all the situations on all fronts there, economic, military, whatever it is, very, very closely. Bob?
This is Robert Strauss, the newly sworn ambassador to Moscow.
Let me just very briefly say that when I... circumstances have changed rather dramatically since I accepted this assignment. It's a different world. Nevertheless, although circumstances have changed, as I've said, it seems to me that my mission remains basically the same, and that is to go to Moscow, to speak very clearly, speak very plainly, and if necessary, with undiplomatic candor from time to time, to speak for you, Mr. President, and you, Mr. Secretary, and for the American people, and to speak for the principles and of freedom and democracy, rule of law, and that I intend to do. I thank you for this, express my appreciation to you for the confidence you've shown in me, and I'll do my best to fulfill the job. Thank you, sir.
The news read by Sandy Walsh. In the continuing protests against the overthrow of President Gorbachev, several thousand people maintained an all-night vigil outside the Russian Parliament building in Moscow. The demonstrators were expressing support for the challenge to the Soviet Union's new hardline communist rulers by the president of the Russian Federation, Mr. Boris Yeltsin. And some Soviet troops have shifted their allegiance to Mr. Yeltsin. Amid growing international concern at the turn of events, President Bush has issued a strongly worded statement calling for Mr. Gorbachev to be restored to power. The day after the ousting of Mr. Gorbachev as leader of the Soviet Union, the president of the Russian Federation, Mr. Boris Yeltsin, continues to be the focus of opposition to the hardline communist takeover. Several thousand people in Moscow kept an all-night vigil outside the Federation's parliament building in support of Mr. Yeltsin's challenge to the new leadership. Others manned barricades nearby. Many deputies remained inside the building, saying they were prepared for a long siege. People had taken to the streets in defiance of tough emergency powers announced by the committee set up to administer the country. These include a ban on demonstrations and sweeping restrictions on the media. There was a heavy military presence in the city throughout the day, but a number of Soviet tank crews have shifted their allegiance to Mr. Yeltsin. Nine of them arrived at the Russian Parliament, and they turned their turrets away from the building to defend it. In the middle of the night, they were joined by some vehicles carrying paratroops. Further demonstrations of support for Mr. Yeltsin were held in other major cities, including Leningrad and Gorky. Yesterday, Mr. Yeltsin announced his own decree declaring the orders of the Emergency Committee illegal on Russian territory. He called on all army, police, and KGB members to switch their allegiance to the Russian Federation, saying all executive organs on Russian territory should take their lead from him until an emergency meeting of the Congress of People's Deputies was convened. Mr. Yeltsin called for a general strike today, and he urged the people of Moscow to defend the Russian parliament. Coal miners in the Kuzbass region of Siberia are reported to have already gone on strike. In the Baltic republics, Soviet troops have taken television stations off the air and seized ports and other key sites, as the military commander of the region declared himself in control. Lithuanian officials said about 100 tanks had entered the capital, Vilnius, during the evening. Military helicopters were reported to have been flying over the Latvian capital, Riga, where the local radio station also reported that Soviet troops had occupied the Interior Ministry. Latvian radio reports that the driver of a minibus had been shot dead, apparently by troops. Government leaders in all three Baltic republics have called for resistance to any military action. As the events in the Soviet Union continued to unfold, President Bush intervened with a tough statement calling on the new Soviet leadership to restore Mr. Gorbachev to power. Mr. Bush, who interrupted his holiday to return to the White House, spent the day with senior officials analyzing what effect the takeover was likely to have on superpower relations. In a written statement, Mr. Bush said the coup was a misguided and illegitimate effort that bypassed Soviet law and the will of the Soviet people. The president said the United States was deeply disturbed by the events in the Soviet Union and condemned what he called the unconstitutional resort to force. He said the United States would not support economic aid programs for the Soviet Union if constitutional means were abandoned. The World Bank announced it was suspending a plan to create a $30 million program to give technical aid to the Soviet Union. Britain has suspended its own program of technical aid to the Soviet Union worth about $80 million. It has urged European Community foreign ministers to do the same when they hold an emergency meeting in The Hague later today. China has given its first reaction. A statement carried by the official New China News Agency said that the changes in the Soviet Union were an internal affair, and China hoped that the Soviet people would solve their own problems by themselves and maintain political stability. The statement added that China wanted Sino-Soviet relations to develop on the basis of peaceful coexistence. This news comes to you in the World Service of the BBC. When the takeover was first announced, it was said that President Gorbachev could not continue in office because of the state of his health. At his first news conference yesterday, the new interim president, Mr. Gennady Yanayev, said Mr. Gorbachev was ill and undergoing medical treatment in the Crimea, where he's been on holiday. He said Mr. Gorbachev was safe and under no threat, and in due course, a medical bulletin would be issued. The Soviet Union's former foreign minister, Mr. Eduard Shevardnadze, says that he is worried that the ousting of Mr. Gorbachev could lead to civil war. Mr. Shevardnadze, who resigned in December after warning of a plot by hardline communists to seize control, appealed to the Soviet people to join forces against those who are now in power. At a news conference in Moscow, he described the developments as a national tragedy, and he called on the hardliners to allow Mr. Gorbachev to appear on television. Workers employed by the official Soviet government newspaper Izvestia have refused to print today's editions. This was after the paper's editorial board had dropped a plan to publish a statement by the Russian president, Mr. Boris Yeltsin. Izvestia had been one of only nine newspapers allowed by the emergency committee to be published. The committee has also closed down a small independent radio station in Moscow, as well as the radio and television stations of the Russian Federation. An emergency session of Yugoslavia's federal presidency has been discussing the impact on the Yugoslav crisis of the coup in the Soviet Union. The meeting is being held against a background of intense fighting in central Croatia in the town of Pakrac. Belgrade Radio says that Serbian forces have taken over the town and captured a large number of Croatian police and militia. However, police contacted in Pakrac say that with the arrival of Croat National Guard reinforcements, the town is holding out. Financial markets in Asia have opened calmer than yesterday when there were sharp losses in reaction to events in the Soviet Union. The BBC Tokyo correspondent says some brokers feel they may have overacted, but investors are still very nervous. Share prices in Japan showed an early recovery, but dropped to end the morning session slightly down. Now, to end the news, the main points again. Several army tanks and thousands of people maintained an all-night vigil outside the Russian Parliament building in Moscow in support of the challenge to the new Soviet leaders by the President of the Russian Federation, Mr. Boris Yeltsin. President Bush has called on the new Soviet leadership to restore Mr. Gorbachev to power. He said the United States was deeply disturbed by events in the Soviet Union. The World Bank has suspended a multi-million dollar plan to aid the Soviet Union. A spokesman for the bank said members of the board would not be voting on the proposal today, as had been originally intended. And amid intense fighting in Croatia, the Yugoslav Federal Presidency has met to discuss the impact of the Soviet coup on their own crisis. And that's the end of the news.